I'm always causing trouble, so.
You have said many times that no one wants to talk about race anymore.
He never did.
Right.
In a truthful diet.
Can you think of any way in a, you know, with the resources that we have in a simple way, that such a dialogue could, even a panel or, you know, something, could there be a discussion? Can you envision?
Well, I think a new generation has to become attuned to an openness that my generation or even the previous two generations after me just don't have. And I'll tell you why. When I was a graduate student at the U of R and I was trying to teach black history out of E. Franklin Frazier's A History of the Negro in the United States, to high school students, primarily black, people like Moses Gilbert, who are adults now, Moses Gilbert, Dickie Boddy, and who's a lawyer on the West Coast now, Estelle Atkins Carter, she passed, and some other young people, Lamar Jackson. Once I got to slavery and started talking about the structure of the slave plantation and everything, they closed their minds and they just wouldn't talk about it. And see, it's my belief that African Americans will never come to grips with the reality of themselves and their historical memory and understand the psychological chains of slavery unless they talk about it. And they just refuse. They say it's too painful. I say, in what way? Tell me if it's painful. That's in the past. That's history. But you ought to know it, to be able to better understand yourself today. They just resisted it. And well, to give you an idea of how deep the psychological aspects of it is, the Kenneth Clark and Mamie Fitz Clark did some historical studies on race awareness in young black children. They published a book probably 1953, Race Awareness in Young Children, and the findings were what they used experimentally was black doll, white doll, brown doll, yellow doll, and they subjected 4 and 5 year old young black children to these variety of dolls, and they just said, you know, go pick a doll, and the children, 2/3 of them would pick a white doll. That was 1948. And so they wrote a book, and their book, I think I can pull out a copy of it. Their book was used as part of the amicus curiae in the Brown versus the Board of Education in 1954, May 17th. And then 1988, Dr. Shirley McNichols and her colleague in Connecticut did essentially the same study, used the same instruments. What did they find? Now, this is after Black Power, Black is Beautiful, Black Exploitation films, and civil rights legislation. What did they find among the young black children? The same result as they did 40 years earlier.
Which is a good doll, which is a smart doll, which is a pretty doll, which doll you want to be friends with.
Right. 40 years later. So, you know, I use those kind of measures to see at least the psychological aspects of it. And you've heard me say that often middle class and upper income blacks are not good role models for low income blacks because the lifestyles are the same. And the psyches are the same. The self-hatred, lack of cooperation with one another. See, that was the problem with fight, dealing with people like myself or Dr. Knox or others. They still had the psychological chains of slavery around their minds, so they couldn't cooperate. They couldn't see the reality of what we were trying to do, because problem becomes, and it's black crime on black crime, if you hate yourself and you see, and you see in another person a reflection of your own pigmentation, which you fundamentally hate, I mean, you can destroy that person without any excuse me.
Do you need another box?
This is the hazardous material.
That's this one.
Yes. Yeah. I have a 1994 Saturn that had a fair amount of damage by the deal. And he thinks that he might be able to. Right.
This is
I live at 68 Skyview Lane.
So, it's 10 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's so. Can we have him
next week? I'm trying not to.
Don't you know what this?
No, I do, very much. But, if I don't produce an article soon, there's going to be problems in my world.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get as much out the door today as possible.
Well, I can do it during the day. I have a dinner session.
All right, so we're going to concentrate our efforts on.
Okay, and where are you located?
Committee on Minority Enrollment, University of Rochester.
You're referring to the process. Mm-hmm. A rough sort, you know, a rough sort, and a lot of these are publications, so it's easy just to, you don't have to put down a place publication, it's title publication, author, if it's readily available, and then go on to the next. It might be helpful if she could include a page count so that he has some idea of what it is.
Right.
Okay. I'll give you a call when I'm okay. Thank you.
Bye then. We're going to go through and sort of blitz it in the way of a quick list before. I mean, there's urbanly here, there's urbanly right. There, there's urbanly there. We'll do that later.
That's right. In terms of consolidating.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is just the inventory.
And you know, I hate to do this because it takes time away from the Bill Hayne collection. Which, of course, I'm donating, committing a lot of my time to.
To whose collection?
This jackass over at Brockport.
Wow. That's serious talk.
Yeah. Well, he's a serious jackass.
What? Who was the guy that you were talking to about Dr. Cooper's papers, the Kodak guy?
Oh, yes, I have a story to tell you. And that is one of our frequent users these days is Martin Scott.
Oh, yeah, Marty. I know Marty. Kind of tall. Yeah.
He comes because he's writing a biography of Rudolph Kingsley.
Kingsley, Rudy, very good man.
Well, so he was in yesterday, and so I just said, oh, yes, and by the way, Dr. Walter Cooper, and he kind of, yes, I knew Dr. Cooper, he said, I used to work two doors down from him,
right.
Something like that at Kodak, and I said, well, what would you think if I said we were getting his papers? He just lit up at that, and he said, that is really fine. He was really, really happy.
Yeah, I always liked him.
What he said was, Dr. Cooper is a man of honor, and they are very rare.
Well, those are nice words. Well, I was taught by my mother, it's kind of, and my wife taught me something too, was that the only thing the real basic thing that you request in a relationship with another person is integrity. If for a moment you question their integrity, then you should have no more dealings with them on a very consistent fashion. And that's so true. Mm-hmm. And my wife, for example, she put up warning signals about some of the personalities that I was involved in the early 60s, and she was right on the money. Martin Scott has always liked him. He's a fine person. They had some fine people in the research lab, but unfortunately, you know, they were not the dominant decision makers in the company. Max Hertzberger, for example, he had known Einstein, and they had corresponded, and I think he had letters of correspondence. I just wondered what happened to his papers. Max Hertzberger, and then there was Arnold Weisberger, Weisberger, Arnold Weisberger. He used to be the editor of a series of publications of physical chemistry methods, Arnold Weisberger. Then Max Hertzberger was a expert mathematician who did physical optics and so forth, all kinds of sophisticated optics he designed.
How do you spell Hertzberger?
I think it's Hershberger. Hertzberger. These were scientists who had gotten out of Germany.
And Weisberger was a chemist.
Oh, yes. Weisberger, Hertzberger had taught, maybe, was it why? One of them had taught at the University of Leipzig. And when the Nazis nationalized the university, he said he was prone to give up on intellectual endeavors, and then he said he remembered that his religion, Judaism, invoked upon him the necessity to be a learned man and continue intellectual endeavors. And I think if you look at the Pentateuch, the first five books of the New Testament, and you go to the writer Hosea, you know, that the fourth chapter, sixth verse, which I like to often quote to black preachers, my people perish for lack of knowledge. If ye reject knowledge, therefore ye reject me. But black preachers don't use that as their text on Sunday mornings. But that's what I told Mayor Duffy. I said, if they come up and they want to help, just say, well, we'll help your church have a library and a competent person to run it, and then we will have you use as your sermons on Sunday morning periodically the book of Hosea, the fourth chapter, the sixth verse. That should make a huge contribution to our educational effort for those children who are still part of the church then. But
you could have that inscribed in the walls of the library.
Right.
But it's kind of interesting if you look at church history. Among African Americans, there was historical interest in education. But when I came here, I just didn't see it. Like the church that I attended as a young man, we had an educational committee as early as the early 40s. And my oldest sister, who was educated, she was the first one off to college in 1941. And in the early 50s, she had graduated from the University of Pittsburgh after a stint in the U.S. Navy where she retired as a second-class petty officer. She was the second African-American woman to graduate from the Great Lakes Wave School, and she chaired an education committee in our church, and she would bring in professionals from the laboratory where she worked in the Pittsburgh and Allegheny County Department of Health to give presentations and so forth. But didn't see anything like that here. And it amazed me that how could a community with such cultural institutions and educationally oriented institutions have such a backward black community. But later on, as I matured, if I could classify myself as a matured citizen now, you look at it and the extreme isolation, and I fault the social service organizations, the black churches, and certainly the schools for the extreme isolation. I mean, you have kids who've never been to Letchworth even. You know, parents have cars, they drive to Florida, but they don't, not Letchworth. At the intersection of University and Atlantic Avenue, you have essentially within walking distance access to the Museum Science Center, the Strassenberg Planetarium, Memorial Art Gallery. Heavy minority population, most of the parents and certainly the children don't even know the existence. And the Science Center has a program called 10,000 Community Passes. You go there free. But I think, you know, this business of educating kids, I think you don't have to, at an early age, at least break the cycle, introduce these youngsters to the institutionalized life of the community. Parents, the real problem is the lack of connectivity between the parents and the institutions. And many of these institutions have supplemental educational programs which would benefit their children. They don't have it.
I wrote a letter to Bill Johnson. And I was complaining, basically the letter, I was complaining about these billboards along the highway that showed these lawyers and, you know, if you have an accident, you know, come and see us, that sort of nonsense, and how ugly they were, and why did they allow this, and why didn't they use the billboards to advertise straight A students in the inner city schools,
right,
and have one half of the billboard with a student now, straight A student, and then have a graduate of that school who has now gone on to college and now has a job as a professor, doctor, someplace else, and so you have these two images. And I thought it was a great thing. You know?
I think it is.
And got this form letter back. Thank you for sending your ideas to the mayor, and I'm sure he'll take it into consideration. It was that sort of form letter thing.
But see, he doesn't get it himself. Bill Johnson doesn't get it. Because he would have, if like the Black Scholars Program, no way in the world, they started it out when he was at the Urban League, student with a C+ could be called a scholar. You're deluding students right from the get-go. You know, I told Kevin Hicks, who writes some of those program for the, published some of those items for the DNC, I said, well, why don't you take a true scholar like Jonathan Farley from Brockport. You know, he's one of the world's 15th great mathematicians. He went to Harvard, 4 years, his transcript read 29 A's and 4 A minuses. He got a prestigious fellowship to Oxford University, where he got a PhD in mathematics. Then he taught at Vanderbilt, and then, MIT, and now he's at Caltech. Just show a picture of him with his, record performance, and then just list aspiring scholars, you know, out of the high schools. If you want to list them as aspiring scholars. They are not scholars. Mm-hmm. Or in 1 year you could take You could take Henry Gates, the super string theorist, the physicist from the University of Maryland, who is well respected in his field. He's essentially a genius. When the Nobel was presented last year in physics, the New York Times asked him to comment in the newspaper on the validity of the work.
I understand that, and I appreciate it.
But you see, that's part of the anti-intellectualism. Bill Johnson has a bachelor's in sociology. Bill Johnson, in my thinking, is not a scholar.
And now he's got a position at RIT.
Yeah, you know how that operated. Yeah, you know the games they play. See, they have to quit playing games in this community, or we're never going to get ahead of this business. And you know, you can quote me, you can tell them, they have to quit playing games.
You're on here.
Yeah, they have to quit playing games.
Well, yeah, the thing with Johnson isn't a bad thing. It's only a bad thing because they haven't done so much more. Right. You know, it's just that one thing, and they think that, well, this is what they can do. And, you know, that's nonsense.
Yeah, but the foundational, anybody with any sense, anyone who has even the slightest indication of the magnitude of the problem, they have to come to the conclusion that we aren't going to get out of this conundrum unless we have better educational outputs for the children. And to me, I feel so strongly that the worst form of child abuse is not to educate a child, because it's a lifelong handicap. The child has no escape if the child is not educated. Labor has been replaced by knowledge. The youngster has to have a knowledge base that is broad enough and deep enough for the youngster to integrate themselves into an economy that's driven by knowledge and is worldwide in scope. Because if that doesn't happen, at best, the youngster is going to get out of this society as a marginal existence. And, you know, to me, that's a reality. You know, a person needs a job. Yes, he needs a job. He'll get a job if he has an education. You know, the probability of getting a job is much higher if you have an education than if you don't have an education. And I mean, it's shameful. You look in a city where you have something like 56% of the population that has at best a sixth grade education. You know, it's just a huge problem of literacy. And that's why the person on the east side of town doesn't even go to the west side of town. That's the isolation. You go where your comfort zone is. You only talk to those people whom you think are on the same page that you are. You know, well, and their children grow up that way. I'm on campus, there's students from China, Korea, you know, England, Australia, and so forth. No, I'm not going to talk to them. One nice thing about my education at the University of Rochester, Noyes and Marshak did a beautiful job of internationalizing the chemistry and physics department. I made many friends from all over the world. From Australia, New Zealand, even South Africa. There was a student in the engineering school. You know, I saw him on a friendly basis.
Did you know Noyes?
Oh, yes. I was in the department when he was dean. Yeah, Albert A. Noyes. He was interesting. He used to have kind of cocktail parties, and he would invite you. And on the invitation, he would say, bring your wife or girlfriend or your mistress, but don't bring two of them.
We should tell you something. Phyllis's husband is Claude Noyes.
Claude?
Yeah. No, I didn't know that. Just in case you were going to tell some story about Dr. Noyes.
Oh, I liked him. Yeah. He was a member of one of the UNESCO committees, you know. Mm-hmm. So both he and Marshak were internationalists. And that's why one of the great things about the university those days, every 2 or 3 years, they had the International High Physics Conference at the University of Rochester. So on campus you would see Enrico Fermi, Victor Weisskopf, Hans Bethe, all the great World War II, post-World War II physicist. I heard Robert Oppenheimer. I was out of graduate school then, but I think in 1959, after he had been banished from atomic energy laboratories, he gave a talk at Laura Strong. And it was so crowded, they had to put speakers outside because of the huge crowd. Yeah, I heard Robert Oppenheimer. Some of those recordings should be around.
Some of them are. Yeah. Oppenheimer, I believe we have. Not Fermi.
They're all the great physicists of World War II used to come here. Because at that time, down at the Duck Pond, we used to call it, right at Elmwood and River Boulevard, was the cyclotron. 250 million electron volts. At that time, it was the most powerful one in the world. And I know a member of the board of trustees of the university. He's a lawyer, and he's often disappointed. He said, instead of maintaining the strength, where they really had strength, they try to be all things to all people. And what they've done is diluted, really, the emphasis at the University of Rochester. That was his opinion. Mm-hmm. But he said, you know, optics, physics, chemistry, particularly photochemistry. We were the world leader in photochemistry. Great work came out of there in the 50s and on into the 60s. Then it changed. You had ABF Duncan, the spectroscopist. You had Noyes, the photochemist. You had Winston Waters, the kineticist. You had Buff, the theoretician, and prior to Buff, you had what was his name? Hill, who was a statistical mechanics theoretician. Yeah, I knew him well. They had Virgil Buckelheit, a member of the National Academy of Sciences, Marshall Gates. They had Tarbell. It really had some good scientists. I enjoyed my years there. They were just a tremendous opportunity to interact with scientists from all over the world.
Did you know Leonard Mandel?
Mandel died about a year ago. I had met him some years ago. He died, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, about a year ago. He was a brilliant man.
Yeah, he certainly was.
Yeah.
Lovely guy.
Yeah.
We have the Mandel papers now.
Yeah.
We're getting the, you know, Wolf papers.
I knew Bob Knox. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was very good in optics. I knew in physics there was Kaplan, and then there was, what was his name, Klein. I think he later went on and became president of Harvey Mudd College. Who was that? He was in the physics department. Yes, gray hair all over, very pleasant smile. Oh God, Joe Klein, maybe Joseph Klein. You had a great man in biology, Hope Fretter. I think he was a member of the French Academy of Science. H-O-L-T-F-R-E-T-E-R, Hope Fretter. His wife was Japanese. Yeah, I used to interact strongly with them. I knew everybody, and I just don't understand, you know, black students not talking to the world. See, that's just foreign to me, not getting to know people and getting some idea of the cultures and so forth. But I think it might have been derived from the fact when I was very young, you know, my father never went to school, but my mother had 9 years of education, but we always had lots of books in the house, books, newspapers. And so I read, and I could imagine those different cultures and so forth. And I said, well, when I grow up, I want to talk to people. And plus the fact, my educational experience, I went to school with the world. You know, in Western Pennsylvania, the large ethnic groups that came in from Southern Europe itself, to work in the steel mills and coal mines. So my high school classmates' parents had come from Sicily, Italy, Greece, Albania, came from Serbia, Croatia, and Italy, and Poland, and Russia, and so forth. So it was kind of an international high school class. And so I learned to pronounce names that people would, when I was at Kodak, say, well, this new scientist's name is Gurovic. What is it? I said, Gurovic. How did you know that? Well, I went to school with people with names like Kalsovich, Christoforidas, and people like that. So, but I guess this all depends on the individual and how you're raised. But my parents also, I'll never forget, I can remember the neighborhood in which I lived. 257 Mitchell Avenue, next door were the Fuscos, then across the street were the Jordans, and then the Griznicks from Czechoslovakia. And I can just go down the pattern of the street and from the neighbors whom I know. But we had community those days. Don't have it now.
So apparently it's the day of correctional facilities, Walter.
Pardon me?
I said apparently today is the day of correctional facilities. I received a pseudo love letter from an inmate a couple of weeks ago who had my name and my correct address.
Well, some women say, well, since there's such a high percentage of men in jail nowadays, that's where you go to find a husband.
I'd rather not have a husband.
Well, I'm not referring to you, but that one time that's where some of the black women were going to find a husband. I said, aren't there enough guys out of jail that you can find? And of course that didn't go over too big. That was the jail ministry.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all that kind of crazy stuff. I said, hey, try to keep those who are outside the jail from going into jail. That's your thing. The priorities we often set.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we don't remember, oh, what power to gift to give us to see ourselves as thither see us. Good nature and good nature they never, how was that? Good nature and good nature they never bind to. Air is human, it's to forgive divine, or something like that.
That's the
goal.
It's papers to go.
You've already seen them.
Yep, I put them
by the door. Did you find anything that'll help you, Laura?
I sure am. I have some nice stuff here on Gallup and Gus.
On Newport?
Yep.
Gallup and Gus Newport.
That's what they called him. Apparently he'd gone.
The Heidelberg kid. He went to Heidelberg in Ohio.
He went to the Caribbean. That's how he garnered the newspaper title, Gallup and Gus.
Gallup and Gus.
He apparently upset somebody with his trip. Foster child care study?
Oh, God.
You are just in the middle of everything.
People made me call up.
The OK program.
The which?
OK program? Literacy program? I don't know. But I've heard people refer to it.
OK.
That was the OK. And they're not, it's not slang. It's
well, people, I think literacy programs have gone by fits and starts. It's one of the problems psychologically, even when blacks are not literate, they hide it. They use all kinds of devices. Now, I knew a young man who came off a migrant farm, and he stayed in Rochester, and he got a job at Kodak in maintenance. Every morning he came in with a newspaper under his arm, but he couldn't read. And it even goes further than that. I gave a paper at the University of California at Berkeley in March of 1969 for the American Physical Society. So I befriended a graduate student in physics who later taught at the University of Rochester, Earl Shaw. And Earl, so I used to have lunch with him and go around with leisure time. And Earl, I saw Earl one day, and we were around the big tower on that campus, and they had a nice seat arrangement around it. And so I saw all these young black men with briefcases. I said, "Oh boy, Earl, you folks are doing very well in terms of your non-white enrollment." He said, "Cool." He said, "Those guys will buy a briefcase and fill it with newspapers or magazines and hang out on campus as if they're students." Can you believe that? The cover-up. The disguise. The mask.
The mask is right.
Yeah, the mask.
We're down to the quick sort now.
It's good stuff in there. Don't go. Don't.
Boy, it is a treasure. Treasure.
Well, let's see. I'll start. Another week you'll have to come because you'll get a similar amount.
You promise me, though, you'll look for that recording.
Yeah, I'll look for the recording. I won't disappoint you.
I'm sure you won't. You haven't yet.
Are these boxes ready to go? What?
You have to have a Phyllis.
Careful. Yes.
They're ready to go out.
If they are full, but wait, there's one that's pull that one.
Which one?
No, pull both of those.
I'll get them.
Okay.
Oh, he's tough. Look at him.
Yeah.
Two.
You got a back too, Richard.
Front too.
I mean, between that and his ability to sniff out mold.
What's that?
I said between that and his ability to sniff out mold, you missed that.
Yeah.
We were teasing him because he said he had the ability to tell whether mold was dead or not by smelling it. So that was the corrections counselor calling me back to tell me what I needed to do. And
if you want to find it, that's
what. You want to know the truth?
What?
I wouldn't share it with him. My ex-husband is in there.
He is.
And I'm having a terrible time trying to keep my son from having to go there.
Oh,
it's terrible. Yeah. I'd rather serve Nazis than niggers. Well.
Have you run across Judge Brady's Black Monday talk?
I don't think so.
Oh, I have that somewhere in the file.
I don't think so.
That was after the Brown versus the Board education decision.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the flower of the South, the milk of the South, sitting next to a gorilla looking blue gum?
I have heard it before. I think I've read it before. Because
Judge Brady.
Flowers and gorillas is ringing a bell.
Judge Brady.
The overgrown gorillas?
Yes.
With paw hands? Yeah, I mean, it's very...
It's Judge Brady's...
Very descriptive. You have more resumes than... It's like you're running
somebody
an employment
wanted
agency.
One.
No, that's not yours. It's somebody else's.
Oh, well, who's this? Is it a group of them? I have Dr. Knox's and
yeah, I saw
his
that.
Brothers. And Mark is the last one.
Get them out of the box. I'm out of the car.
Walter Cooper.
What is that?
Martell, we as black people believe the United States system has committed the practice of genocide, revolutionary change. Sounds like I had to look at that one at home. Administration, law, and legislation.
That was a committee I served
Carter. By Christopher Lynch.
I'll drive all around town.
Is it a riot or black revolution? Is this local?